Coming up, now that it's summer, many of you are in our Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course, and that is still going on. That is probably one of the best ways to enter into understanding herbal medicine, whether you're someone who would like to use that for yourself and your family, or if you're a professional. If you are a professional, such as a nurse, midwife, massage therapist, acupuncturist, RD, or certified nutritionist, all people with licenses can get 18 CEUs in addition to learning about natural medicine. And if you're someone who doesn't have a license, you can still take the class and begin to learn how to use botanical medicine and herbs for yourself and your family. So that is going on right now. You can still join the class by going to naturalnurse.com. And then classes. And although some of the live classes are over at this point in the year, we have those archived. So if you take the course, you get the full course as well as one-on-one access with me to review all the things that are going on. Or you can take any one of the classes by itself. For instance, we have one coming up soon called Feeling the Consciousness of Plants. And, you know, since ancient times, people have worked with plants in terms of interacting with their consciousness. People have experienced plant communication, and we are now validating this reality with scientific investigation. So in that class, we will learn how to integrate plant communication into your life, into your soul, and into your medicine. And also, it helps you decide which remedy is the right one for yourself and your loved ones. So that class is coming up and can be taken all by itself. That offers 3 CEUs if you're a licensed individual. And then, of course, you can take it. Anyone can take it. Then, since it's getting to warm up, we're having in the Northeast a lot of our wild, edible, and medicinal herb identification walks and workshops. So on June 10th, we have a walk, and that's in Old Bethpage, New York. And then Dr. Zamperone and I get together and we do our herbal medicine making workshop, where we actually go out in the field, gather wild, edible, and medicinal plants. Of course, you learn how to identify them. And on that day, we'll identify them and say, pick these, and then teach you how to pick them, when to pick them, why to pick them. And then we retreat and actually do a medicine making workshop where we make our own medicine. So we also have walks in Chinatown, and we have trips to Jamaica, which is called Echo Tours for Cures, where we actually travel to another country. And if you are interested in making herbal remedies to sell, and a lot of people do, they make a little skin cream and everybody loves it. Well, if you're going to do that, I would suggest you take our class called Herbal Manufacturing Legal Considerations, because it is unfortunate, but the FDA and the FTC sent out 700 letters last week to anyone they could find who's making herbal medicines. And it was not an action, but it was a warning. So that means they're looking at you. And if you have one word on your website, on any label of a product, all that's considered labeling, including your website, including your Instagram, including your little influencer videos, yes, they are going after all of those people. And it is $15,000 a pop. So if you feel that you can ignore that, then ignore it. If you feel like, well, I'm, you know, making little herbal remedies, they're not really going to bother me. If you're online, they very likely will be bothering you. If you are making little remedies and selling them only at your local farmer's market and you don't have any web presence, it's still illegal, truthfully. But if you want to not be found, then you really cannot have a business and you cannot have anything posted online and you cannot have a little influencer video saying, I took this and it made my stomach Hey, go away. Yeah, you can say it until they find you. When they do, it's a $15,000 fine or more. So I always say no before you go. And we have a class called Herbal Manufacturing Legal Considerations. So at least you know, right? Know before you go. So you can contact us through naturalnurse.com about any of those things or questions that you have in natural medicine. And of course, we have many books available there, hundreds or maybe thousands of podcasts and articles. And those are all free for you for any time. And today we are bringing on board our guest, Joan Ifland, and she is a PhD and MBA, and she has been creating breakthroughs in recovery from food addiction since 1999 with her first popular book and her textbook, Processed Food Addiction, Foundations, Assessment, and Recovery. And she founded the online addiction research Reset Community, that's called the ARC, Addiction Reset Community, and also the Facebook group, Food Addiction Education. And she provides free support and also has something called Reset Week, which is the first online live video program for withdrawal from junk food and processed food, and she'll talk about that more. Dr. Ifland earned her PhD in addiction nutrition at Union Institute and University and her MBA at Stanford Business School. So she has been educating herself for many decades and currently resides in Seattle, where my son lives also. He lives in Mount Lake Terrace, a little bit north of Seattle. So thank you so much for joining us today, Joan.
Ellen, thanks for having me. I appreciate this.
So what got you interested, and this is quite a while ago, in something that you call food addiction?
Well, in 1996, I gave up sugars and flours to lose weight. And
let's define that. You said sugars and flours. So what do you mean by that? What sugars and what flowers? Obviously not like a rose, right? Sugars and flowers.
F-L-O-U-R-S, right, okay. right.
What kind of flowers did you give up? Well, I think we might have lost our guest temporarily. So if that's the case, engineers, why don't we go to a natural medicine chest and then we'll, try to get Joan back online because unfortunately, I don't see her listed. So we're going to go to a little break right here and see if we can bring our guest back. Okay, well, I am seeing Progressive Radio Network still and I see myself still. But I don't see our guests, so I'm not sure if this is going out to all you listeners or not. But we can just talk about something else. We can talk about some of the natural progression of even legal things in the news, or we can talk about something else. So I would take your calls, but I'm not sure if the station is there, because they're not answering me either. So I'm just not sure if this is going out to you listeners at this point. And I would think not. Okay, so I am going to sign off now for the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and then hopefully we will reschedule this show and hopefully the station will come back on so they can either play an archive or see what happens. We're having technical difficulties. Thank you so much for joining us today if you're listening. Whoops, I see Joan is there again. Looks like she's connecting to audio. Are you there, Joan?
Yes.
Okay, now we're getting a double sound.
Sorry.
I'm not sure.
There we go. I'm so sorry. I just lost my connection.
Yeah, I was trying to get in touch with the station managers to have them play an archive or play.
Oh.
But they didn't. So I'm not
sure
they are there.
All right. I'm so sorry.
Hopefully
you were asking yeah. how I got involved in this.
Yeah, and you were talking about flowers.
Yes, right.
And sugars.
So you had just asked what is considered to be a sugars and flowers.
Right.
F-L-O-U-R-S. So sugars are include any kind of sweetener. Any sweetener that has been extracted from a plant. So plants are wonderful, and plants can be made into medicines as you're talking. And all your audience would certainly understand this, that plants have natural endorphins in them. And when you eat them, and you eat them with the fiber and you chew them up, those natural endorphins get into our system quietly and happily, and they make eating plants enjoyable. But if you concentrate them and they get into your system quickly, they can elevate or excite the reward pathways in the brain. You get a high from that, followed by a crash. The reward cells, the reward neurons are exhausted, and then you get a crash. It feels bad. You get a craving to use the substance again. That's an addiction. So what you want to do when you're eating plants is, you know, food plants, not medicinal plants, but food plants, is you want those natural endorphins to reach your brain slowly and in a pleasant way. So it's like Mother Nature said, I'm not going to just say eat so you don't die. I'm going to make this enjoyable. I'm going to make it attractive.
So that when you say you're not eating any sugars, so would you still eat a piece of fruit, which also
yes.
has sugar in it, but it's just not extracted?
Right. It's not extracted and concentrated. In other words, it hasn't crossed over that threshold from food to a substance that can stimulate an addictive response in the brain. So if you take that apple and you take out the fiber and you liquefy it, you're concentrating the natural sugars and you're making those sugars available to be absorbed very quickly by the body because now it's a liquid. That would be like an apple juice concentrate or just apple juice. That now has crossed the threshold into, it has now has addiction potential. And if you use it often enough, then you acclimate those reward cells to an addictive response where they're now flooding the brain with cravings and then crashing. It's the high and the crash that creates the compulsion. Flour is also capable of doing that because it's a very fine powder. So why are drugs typically sold in a powdered form or a crystallized form? It's because then the drug content of the substance can be delivered to the body and the brain in a concentrated enough form to create that high, followed by the crash. It's euphoric. That high is euphoric. But the crash, it's part of the theory is that the crash is what drives the addiction because it does feel bad. And people do have that drive then to correct that by using again. Many flours also have gluten. And gluten contains a naturally occurring morphine, gluteomorphine. It's a natural plant endorphin. And when you take like barley or wheat or rye, any of the gluten-containing grains, and you powder them, just like with the sweeteners, it becomes possible for enough concentrated gluteomorphine to reach those reward centers to overexcite them. They overproduce euphoria, pleasure, and then you have the crash. And that's what creates the addiction.
So, of course, when you started a lot of your research and study, that word gluten and gluten-free was not that big buzzword that it is now. So you were, you know, discussing these things long before that became like a mainstream trend.
Yes. So I started in 1996, where there was already evidence for the opioid properties of gluteomorphine. There was a little bit. Then, and now the researchers have really honed in on this. They've isolated the opioid. They have a much better definition of it. Plus, we have a really good study where a researcher was studying celiac disease. So he had his control group and he had his celiac disease group, and he asked them all to get off gluten, and they felt better in different ways. Then he followed up with both groups 6 months later and checked in with them. And he was surprised to find that the control group, people in the control group, had stayed off the gluten because they found that they had improved depression, improved mood. So we do know that there are mood altering properties to gluten now. We do have a good study on that. Yeah, so by getting off those sugars and flours, I just had incredible changes in my own life. Within 4 days, cravings were gone. I had had cravings since a small child. I didn't know that not having cravings was an option. And now, based on the research I've done in those ensuing 27 years, I know that cravings are a sign of addiction, and that most people have them in the United States. I hope we get to talk about prevalence. I hope that your listeners will start to look among their patients for signs of processed food addiction. But cravings is one of them. And they're so prevalent that people accept them as normal. But that is the sign of an addicted brain. So the cravings stopped, the brain fog stopped, the bloating stopped, the fatigue stopped, and that all happened kind of around day 4. So these are changes that can come on very quickly. And then the next week, I noticed that my allergies, what I thought were airborne allergies, runny nose, swollen eyes, that got much, much better. My asthma got much better. And a lifelong sinus infection cleared up. But it was in the third week that I really got hooked on this field. And I realized I hadn't yelled at my family in those 3 weeks. So I was a rager. I was raised by two ragers. I wanted it to stop. I was doing a lot of things to try to get the raging to stop. Personal therapy, a women's healing group, a 12-step group, and nothing was working. And then I realized that my irritability, crabbiness, critical nature had just eased away. And that was at the end of 3 weeks. So I was in a support group and another 12-step group. And I went and I asked, do people become less irritable on this food plan? And everybody in the room said, yeah. So that was the moment I just committed my life to letting people know what these refined carbohydrates were doing. And now 27 years later, a PhD in a textbook later, the way I see the evidence for excessive salt, for dairy, for excessive fats, and for caffeine and food additives.
When you were making that decision to give this a try, which is interesting because something must have clued you in to even give it a try. Did you first go out shopping, which I always recommend that my clients do this, go out and get what you feel you will be able to eat, because probably, like most people, you ate mostly wheat and sugars. You know, that was probably most of what you ate. And when you suggest this, sometimes people go, but what will I eat? And you need to have it there and planned ahead of time. You can't just not be able to eat anything that's in your house.
Righto, Ellen, this is so wise. You're deeply experienced in this, I can tell.
Oh, yes, since 1964.
Oh, yes, yay. So this is something that I've learned over the 27 years, and thank you for mentioning our online community. This is a skill set. It is a skill set. And these food plan organizations, quote unquote, support groups, you walk in and they hand you a food plan and they say, follow this. Well, follow this requires building skills, shopping skills, cooking skills, storing skills, portioning skills. And I think that what's really helpful is if you're around people who are doing the same thing, we have an overwhelming drive in our brains to fit in, to belong, to be accepted. Because whether you're a creationist or an evolutionist, if you belong to a tribe, you lived, your genes got passed on. And the tribe decided whether to accept you, find food, water, shelter for you, protect you from predators, based on whether you fit in. And that's behaviors. And that that drive in the brain is still there. So if you surround yourself with people who are also gaining these skills, or better, already practicing these skills and can talk about them and demonstrate them, then you acquire a skill set and you can do it. I just think that people are expected to do way too much without developing the skills.
Well, so that's why support groups are so helpful. Yes.
Yeah. You're talking about, you know, you can do it step by step. You can say, go to the grocery store. Don't stay in the grocery store for too long, because that grocery store is engineered to trigger, stimulate, signal the release of those craving chemicals. Once the brain has been trained to associate sugar with the release of those chemicals, then the food processors can release those cravings with a reminder. It's called an associative cue. But that's why you want to get in the grocery store, out of the grocery store, before dopamine, serotonin, opioids, and cannabinoids have built up in the brain from these carefully engineered triggers.
Well, we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and you can listen to The Natural Medicine Chest. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion about the food addiction reset with Dr. Joan Ifland, and you can find out more at her website, foodaddictionreset.com. We will have links to that and other items for her and how to get in touch with her. When our show, you know, you can visit the archives, and all those will be live links in case you're driving in the car, like some people listen to us on their podcasts. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Since 1999. So we're so happy to have her on board today. Now, Dr. Joan, what made you even consider that all those health issues that you were having might be linked to your diet?
Well, it was an abrupt change. I started on this to lose weight. I was a yo-yo dieter from the time my children were born in the early 1980s, and I was still yo-yo dieting in 1996 when this started. That was the only thing that had changed. I started on January 1st, 1996. I eliminated sugars and flours, and I started eating only whole foods.
So let's say, for people to get ready to do that, what would you have at your house ready to go with the intention of not eating a lot or any sugar and flour. So what would you have at your house, since almost everybody's meal, that's what it is?
So I would start, we have a handout on our website. You can email us and ask for this handout. It's a list of unprocessed foods. It's called Unprocessed Foods. And what I did with my family was I sat down with them and we circled all the things that we liked from that list. And I went to the grocery store and I bought them all. I knew this would be a big change for my family as well. So what I said to them is, I'm not going to give you sugars and flours, and we're not going to keep them in the house. You have your allowance. You can buy them outside the house.
I did the same thing with my kids. Mm-hmm. I actually did, because I felt like if I told them, no, you can never have this, not when you go to a birthday party. Well, guess what? They're going to do it. And then there's lying on top of the bad food molecules,
Brilliant.
Which is probably worse. So my rule was exactly that. This is what I have to offer. You can eat here or go find food elsewhere. This is not a democracy. This is an autocracy, and I'm in charge. I got the money, and I buy the food. That's what I did.
Well, by the time I sat down with him and I realized how huge this is, 3 weeks had gone by, and they'd noticed that the Wicked Witch had left. I wasn't criticizing, yelling. I wasn't doing any of that anymore, raging. And so they were like, Mom, anything we can do to help you. So that was a huge advantage. And then I set up a system where on Friday afternoons, I cooked my starches and proteins. So they were...
Like what? Give examples.
Well, Ellen, help me here. Are you a plant-based community? Should I limit
my
remarks?
No, not at all. No, everybody, you know, we have 400,000 listeners, so.
Okay. So proteins are, of course, any animals. And plant proteins are beans and rice, millet, buckwheat, quinoa, amaranth. They're all pretty high in protein. So they take time to cook. I would cook those on Sunday afternoon. Freeze half of them, put the other half in the back of the refrigerator where it's coldest. So I would just heat up the oven and the stovetop and get all of that done. And then during the week, I was just pulling out cooked proteins, opening a bag of salad, any kind of vegetable, putting it on the plate. At that time, I was eating starches. Starches also take a long time to cook, so they were all cooked. And it was just like clockwork.
Yeah, I do the exact same thing to this mm-hmm. day. I am extremely busy in my life.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't have time to cook good, healthy food each day. But I dedicate Sunday afternoon, really only 2 to 3 hours, plus the shopping time, which, by the way, is now eliminated because now we have food delivery. We didn't have the grocery mm-hmm. delivery back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I just did it for a couple of hours. And I have glass, just from Target, these glass dishes, because I don't like plastic, that snap tight. I'd cook a whole bunch of different things like you did, let it all cool, freeze a lot of it. Also, I made big pots of soup with, all healthy vegetables and my own chicken, because I raised my own animals.
That's
and,
fantastic.
You know, then just freeze a lot of it and leave some in the fridge so that mm-hmm. they're a different stage of immediate access or not. But that makes it so inexpensive.
Right.
When people tell me they have to eat junk food because it's cheaper. That's not right. Whole good food. Okay, I went the additional step. As I could afford it, to organic. When I first mm-hmm. started, I couldn't because I was mm-hmm. a single mother raising two kids and working a million shifts as a nurse. But when now, thank God, I could afford organic, especially because the kids are all grown and garden. I only have to feed myself and my husband.
Yeah.
So I take that additional step. It's still not expensive.
You're raising
not expensive.
A very good point. Which is what is the deceptive messaging coming out of the processed food industry? And that is one of the most deceptive, which is eating healthy is expensive. Eating healthy can be a cup of rice and a cup of beans on your plate. That is 60 cents for organic rice and beans. So this is just it's something that I've really studied because, as you mentioned, I'm an MBA. I have studied business models. The reason why people can't stop eating, and I think this is most valuable for your audience. Your audience is in the front line. They're in the trenches with people who are sick. And they, you may come across people whom you tell, you know, you give them the resources to change their food and they can't. They come back week after week. They haven't changed their food. They're still sick. These people could, you could be pushing up, you know, banging your head against a hidden addiction. So when the tobacco industry bought Kraft, Nabisco, and General Foods in the mid-1980s, they brought a very highly honed expert addiction business model with them. They brought the I call it the five A's of the addiction business model. It's advertising, availability, affordability, young age of onset, and hidden addictive substances in the seemingly innocent product. They went, they immediately went around and added lots of sugar, fat, salt to products like breakfast cereals, like pasta sauce, and people unknowingly ate those products again and again, established the addiction. And then the next step in the addiction process is then to surround that person with stimulation, stimulation that will release a flood of cravings. So that is what I really hope that your audience, you've got an incredible audience, that they will start to look for this hidden addiction. They will stop blaming themselves for being unable to change behavior in their patients and stop blaming the patient and start saying, oh, this person needs addiction recovery treatment.
Yeah, so even discussing it in terms of addiction is like a little bit of a different twist that people don't realize that it's, you know, beyond just their decision control. I was very interested in what you said earlier, which I don't know much about. Please let us know about it, where you're talking about if you walk into a grocery store there, and maybe also on TV commercials, there are built-in addiction triggers that will make you want to crave to eat that stuff.
Yes. So they are deliberately provoking, deliberately stimulating your reward system, which has been sensitized by, it's sensitized meaning made very reactive. It reacts in a big way to stimulation, a cue, a trigger, a reminder, a signal. And what is the reaction? The reaction is to release a flood of cravings. Those neurotransmitters, those craving neurotransmitters, are there in such volume that they can reach the behavior centers in the brain, totally bypassing the frontal lobe. The frontal lobe is where you make decisions and solve problems and remember and learn and pay attention and control impulses. So this is a deliberate kind of rearranging of brain function. These corporations hire neurologists to do this. They have their own brain imaging equipment. They put people in that brain imaging equipment to study which combination of ingredients with the marketing, the stimulation, the cueing, the triggering, will release the greatest flood of cravings. And then the cravings can go straight across the brain to the behavior centers and actually latch on to the behavior neurons and control them. Now, our braking system is in the frontal lobe, but when the cravings become that intense, when there's that concentration of craving neurotransmitters in the brain, the frontal lobe is not involved at all. And so here's your good audience teaching, coaching, discussing, reviewing, doing, but, you know, putting heart and soul, putting the right herbs in the patient's hands. And the patient continues to eat badly and continue, the diabetes doesn't go away, the heart disease markers don't go away, the mood doesn't improve. Well, it's because addiction recovery is a very focused, specialized, it's almost like an expert skill set. You learn thought control, you learn behavior control, you learn emotion control. You learn what those cues, those triggers, that stimulation is doing. Relationship management, because stress is a big relapse trigger. Stress kind of dances with those addiction centers. They're trying to balance each other out. So stress can actually activate cravings. So there's a tremendous amount of training, a skill set in remaining calm in all situations. Processed foods artificially elevate adrenaline. So patients are not used to being calm. They're not used to being able to be calm because they have all this extra adrenaline in their system. So skills. And then protection, just like wearing almost like a helmet to protect against this cueing. We accomplish that because we broadcast over 15 hours a day. So if people need to go in a grocery store, they can put their earbuds in, be listening to, no, we don't eat that. In this tribe, you know, we want to fit in, and no, they don't eat that.
So they change, you know, hopefully change behavior. Well, we're going to take another little break here for our station, which is our wonderful Progressive Radio Network, PRN.LIVE, to be able to tell you about what's going on there. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Dr. Joan Ifland, and we are talking about the food addiction reset. And if you want to reset your food patterns, visit the website foodaddictionreset.com. It has lots of information for you there. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Learn about topics you want to know more about. We have thousands of actually shows available, and we have a searchable database so you can look for a topic you're interested in that relates to natural. And today we have as our guest Dr. Joan Ifland, and she is from the foodaddictionreset.com. I would think, Dr. Joan, that some people, when they know that they're not eating correctly, it's almost really supportive to think about it in terms of an addiction rather than just you can't make better choices, because it almost says, well, it's not even my fault, it's an addiction.
So yes, I think it is really important for people to know, both practitioners and patients, to know that this is in fact not your fault, that we've been as a country and increasingly the world exposed to these addiction business practices. And I'm just hoping that your audience will be interested in training in how to address a severe addiction. Why is it a severe addiction? What evidence am I standing on when I say that? Well, the American Psychiatric Association has addiction diagnostic criteria. There are 11 signs of an addiction. And if a person is showing 6 or more of those signs, it's a severe addiction. And that means you're not going to treat it in a once a week visit or even a daily meeting. It has to be more at an immersion level. And that's why we broadcast over 15 hours a day. People can play our programming in the background while they go about their lives. It's a big asset that Zoom has brought us, that you don't have to go to residential treatment. You don't have to leave your family and your job. You can listen in the background enough to block out the cueing, which is a big motivation why addicted people go to residential treatment, so they won't be triggered, that their brains will be flooded with cravings from reminders. So it is a very particular treatment regimen, what we talked about before, the thought control, the emotional control. But you can train. I would just encourage your listeners to get the training, because the practitioners are also blaming themselves. I saw a headline the other day that 1 in 6 doctors wants to quit. They're frustrated. Their tools are very limited. Their training is very limited to mostly to surgery and pharmaceuticals.
But also the concept of addiction, although that is there, certainly, not so much what your focus is, which is food addiction. I mean, sometimes they're thinking about food addiction just in terms of the very morbidly obese people who cannot stop eating for a minute. But you're talking about sort of a pre-planned chemical addiction because of processed food. I don't think we've used that word enough in our show today. Most of this is about processed food. Now, my house, I always tell people, is a paragraph-free zone. In other words, there is not one single paragraph on anything that's in my refrigerator or my cabinet.
Right.
So there's no paragraph on it. So right away, if there's no paragraph on it, there's nothing processed. There's like celery, avocado, an apple, an orange. I do have meat. I eat very little of it. You know, I raised my own and it's organic and I eat very little of it, but it's just meat. It's not with a million things on a paragraph on it. There's just no paragraphs. That's how I do it.
Yes. It still looks like it looked at harvest. So celery still looks like it looked pretty much when it was pulled out of the ground. Carrots, if you can still identify it for sure, then it's not processed. But it is the processing that concentrates the endorphins that makes products addictive. So you're right. It's how do you identify it? The other way to identify it is it gives you cravings. Because even though a banana, for example, is intact, it's so high in sugar that these very, very sensitized brain cells, and remember, you did not agree to, nobody ever called you up and said, oh, would you like to be addicted? No, you were an unwitting, innocent, kind of captive. The origin of the word addiction is to enslave. Because your thoughts are not your own. Your thoughts are being dictated by the addiction. So, yes, I just cannot emphasize enough that we're offering science-based training in this now. We're offering the Food Addiction Recovery Advocate certification. But until somebody has that training, they look for other explanations for why their patients aren't being successful. They blame themselves, they blame the patient, but it's actually an undiagnosed, untreated addiction. And I can run through some of the common signs if you think that would be helpful to you.
We do have a few minutes, so I think that would be a great thing to share with our audience.
All right. We have a self-quiz on our website. It's not a diagnostic tool. It's an educational tool. So we've tracked over many years with thousands of respondents. What are the 6 most common? If you meet these 6, and over 80% of Americans meet these 6, this is common, then it's a severe addiction. It's not just a garden variety addiction, it's a severe addiction. So unintended use, you have a plan and you can't follow it. Failure to cut back, almost 100% of people regain lost weight. Cravings correlate with BMI. 83% of the country is overweight or obese. And then use in spite of knowledge of consequences. 93% of Americans have a metabolic illness. And then withdrawal. Withdrawal is headache, lethargy, irritability, depression, sometimes stomach ache. And those are epidemic in our culture. And then tolerance, which means you're using more over time. And we see that on a whole population basis. Americans are now eating 73% of their calories in these addictive processed foods. And that just, it rises year after year. So we see tolerance across the entire population. Those are six. Those are six out of 11. And we see that over 80% of Americans are suffering from that. And you're making a very good point, which is food addiction can also exist in very thin or normally weighted people. They may be practicing bulimia, or they may be practicing excessive exercise to keep the amount of fat tissue under control. Or they may be of a profile where the fat tissue is accumulating around their organs, inside their bodies. It's not under their skin. And they are at much greater risk of serious disease as a result. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, very. And I love the concept. I invite all our listeners to go to foodaddictionreset.com. And you can find out how you can get more information and see, you know, maybe if you don't feel well, I'll tell you right now, you need to look at what you're eating. I mean, a lot of people just avoid that, whether it be just mood challenges like depression or, of course, having more weight than you want, but much more than that. Mm-hmm. Just eating a muffin every day is an addictive behavior, and people don't realize that.
And they
try
have no
eating
idea.
A high protein breakfast instead. You feel amazingly better the rest of the day. It's pretty simple.
People are amazed at the full range of things that get better, and it's because processed foods cripple cell function. It's a cellular level. So I've seen over the 5.5 years that we've had our online recovery community, a lot of different things just go into remission. And I kind of hesitated to talk about it because it seems so kind of over the top. But now that I have seen the impact on cell function, well, when cells are healthy, you don't have disease. Now I see why such a broad range of mental, emotional, physical, and behavioral conditions go into remission. I'm not talking about just get better. I mean, go away.
So that
but
is
dealing with
so
the stress
exciting.
Is big, another piece of it.
Thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Joan Ifland. And
thanks,
do visit foodaddictionreset.com. This is Ellen Kamai. You can always communicate with us, see what we're doing at naturalnurse.com. And until next time, on behalf of myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, we're hoping that you stay healthy.